Welcome back to the Groups Matter podcast, episode 30, and I am here with Chris Surratt. Chris, it's fall. It's here.
It is, which means cooler weather.
And oh, my.
Better than that, football.
Football, yeah. You know, I was up in Boston recently as a part of some other business, and I thought, you know, I bet these guys don't talk about college football a whole lot.
Not as much as we do in the South, otherwise known as the home of the SEC.
That's right. But I bet they do talk about the NFL in a city like Boston.
This is true. They've got a pretty decent team, although they're going to be missing their quarterback for the first four games. So there is some hope for the rest of the NFL. Not a lot, but a little bit.
Or at least the AFC East. You know, it's a tough break for the Patriots, isn't it? Just a tough.
Really tough. That's what the Texans are saying right now. They're just really feeling sorry for them. Yeah, we all feel sorry.
Really feel for the Patriots these days.
We just lost every Boston listener out there.
Well, it's a great show we've got today. We've got Ben Reed from Saddleback calling in.
We do. Ben is an amazing guy, amazing young leader. I can say that because I'm not so young anymore. He's a young leader. And right now he is on the small groups team. He's a pastor at Saddleback Church, little bitty church in Southern California. I don't know how many of you have heard of it, but he's a pastor there. He's also written a book called Starting Small, about small groups. I had a chance to do an endorsement for that book. Absolutely love it. And he was in Nashville, actually, before that. He was at a church called Long Hollow Baptist Church, and before that at Grace Church in Clarksville. And that's actually when I got to know Ben first, was when he was at Grace Church.
And if you don't follow Ben on any of the social media outlets, Facebook or Twitter or his blog, you're really missing out, because not only does he deliver some good content, He's really a fun read. He is a sharp thinker.
He is. He's a prolific writer as well. He writes several places. He's got his own blog, plus he contributes to a lot of websites. So I always appreciate what Ben brings when he brings his wisdom.
So while we had a minute here, we didn't take the opportunity last week because we're running a little late, but we had Michael Kelly on. I wanted to get your thoughts or any follow-up while we're waiting on Ben to call in. So Michael came on, and we spent about a half hour with Michael talking about discipleship. Were there anything Michael said that was particularly or uniquely insightful that you wanted to, well, obviously, a lot of what Michael says is uniquely insightful, but from that, is there anything you wanted to follow up on and maybe give some additional thoughts to or about?
I think all of what Michael says is insightful. He's a brilliant guy, especially when it comes to discipleship. But what I loved a lot about kind of the overall theme of what he had to say about discipleship is that it's intentional. That you need to have an intentional plan as a church on how you're going to disciple your people. I think a lot of churches just kind of hope that discipleship happens, and that if you have small groups or if you have Sunday school classes and they're meeting on a regular basis, that they're obviously getting discipled. And that's not always the case, although it can be. But I think that churches need to think through the plan and be intentional about it, and then make it easy for their groups or their classes to disciple their members. We also overcomplicate discipleship a lot, which is what Michael hit on with his blog post and when he talked to us. So I think we need to make it as easy as possible, which we talked about a tool called Disciples Path, the Journey, and also smallgroup.com. But just giving our group leaders and class leaders tools to be able to have an intentional plan for discipleship, that's really key.
Yeah, and on notions of intentionality, of course, you and I on the publishing side of things, it's amazing to me how often I'm with a group of small group leaders and pastors, and we talk about, so what are you doing like in the groups with the time? And there's not as much thought given to like Bible study curriculum choices as maybe what one would imagine. So I would add that, this balance idea of a balanced discipleship strategy, because a group left unto its own design or thoughts, which is one of the appeals of small group ministry, right? Is that autonomy that we can decide. Mm-hmm. So yep. If we need a marriage, if we think we need to spend 6 weeks talking about a healthy incarnate marriage, we can do that. If we think that a stewardship study is good, we can do that. Yep. If for whatever reason we think the book of Acts or one of the epistles is good, we can do that. But if you're not careful, you can have a group that gets out of symmetry.
Yeah, I think that it's good to have a common language or a common interest to come around as a group. When you think about your friends, you had something in common. That's why you became friends. So I think having something that you can come around and say, this is interesting to us, so we're going to study it more. But then you get kind of lopsided if that's all that you do. And, you know, after a year or, you know, 14 months, you kind of are talking about the same questions and circling around the same ideas instead of following a map, which kind of leads you maybe into an area that's not as comfortable for the group, but needs to be talked about. And so I think that's so important that you have somewhere to go and you're not just circling the same thing. And also, I'm a big believer that groupthink can become bad theology really quickly. And so if you don't have good content, solid biblical content, you're just kind of making it up as you go. And it's limited by the leader's biblical knowledge. And we don't want to set the bar for every leader at the seminary degree, or you won't have a lot of groups. And so you need something that's going to guide them, give them some wisdom, give them some biblical background in what's being discussed in the group.
Maps are good, so is a menu. So if you look at your content options or your Bible study options categorically, like doctrine, book of the Bible, historical, biblical figure, missionality, community, identity, and choose, you know, in any given time period, like a year or a spring or fall, since summers tends to be kind of neither here nor there, you say, we're going to move in and out of these categories with our study options so that we know that we're getting a balanced discipleship strategy. So intentionality, I think Michael's point, of course, intentionality covers, it runs the gamut from leadership issues all the way down to group leaders to discipleship, my personal holiness and disciple making, all of that. So we are, it was good to have Michael on the show, and he's just one of my favorite people, and I think yours too.
Yep.
It's good. Great leader as well. So we've got Ben coming on. I think let's see if we've got Ben on the phone. I think we do.
All right, so we've got Ben Reed on the phone here. So excited that he is joining us. Thanks, Ben, for being a part of this podcast.
Chris, thanks for having me on. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Sweet. Ben has been a friend of mine and a friend of Brian's for a long time. I think we first met when I first moved to Nashville, went on staff at Crosspoint, and you were at Grace Church in Clarksville, and you reached out to me, I think through Twitter when that used to be a thing, and said, would you like to get together for some coffee? And you and I met for, you drink coffee and I drink a non-coffee, which is my thing.
Ben
and,
drinks coffee. Ben he does.
It. I was just going to say, it kind of set up our friendship.
I think it's my spiritual gift. Like, God gave me this gift. I would be a bad steward if I didn't consume copious amounts of coffee.
Yeah, I don't know how you would survive in that horrible weather and life in Southern California if you didn't have coffee.
There is no weather in California.
It's rough. It's a tough area to live because the weather's beautiful all year round. But I mean, God calls us to this. So what was I going to say?
God does have to call you to that. That is true. You know, it's fall and you wouldn't know what that means because it still feels like it did in summer and spring.
No, the worst, actually, I think the worst weather-wise, which you can't see me right now, but I'm putting that in air quotes, the worst weather in SoCal is fall. And I think part of me says that it's the worst weather because I love fall from when I was in Tennessee, grew up in Tennessee my whole life. And so fall for me is it turns cooler. The leaves are changing. You know, you may even it's going to spit a little snow here and there. Football is the best because it's a little bit chilly on Saturday mornings. And out here in SoCal, the fall is, I mean, a lot of days I'm going home in the fall at, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock at night, and it's 105 degrees. So it's a dry heat, so it's not awful, but it's still hot and well into the evening in the fall, so it's not the best out here.
That's good. And you don't know what college football is out there, so, you know.
They have no clue.
You have no?
They have no clue. I'm introducing people to the SEC out here, which is the, I mean, let's be honest, it's the epitome of college football. So
yep, Yep, you are completely correct on that. All right, so let's jump in. I'd love to hear your thoughts on some things. You know, first of all, obviously I mentioned you were in Nashville, and from Grace Church you went to Long Hollow Church, just north of Nashville, and then ended up at Saddleback, and as I said in the intro, just this little bitty church. If anybody's heard of it, it's a guy named Rick Warren, pastor, you know, a guy named Steve Gladen's, the group's, you know, just kind of giving some background for people so they know who you are. But tell us a little bit, how did you kind of make that journey from a church plant in Clarksville, yeah, and then to a pretty large church, Long Hollow, to a mega church in Southern California? What was that journey like?
Yeah, I'll back out even one more church before that. So I was on staff at a small country church. We ran about 50 on a weekend service while I was in seminary, just outside of Louisville, Kentucky. So transitioned from there to I got a call from a buddy of mine. His name's Ron Edmondson. And he said, hey, we have a small group pastor opening. Would you be interested in that? And I said, well, maybe. I got to figure out what a small group is, and then I'll get back with you. And so I didn't know that a small group pastor was a thing. And so I jumped in, and it was one of those that maybe you have this kind of moment in your life where you step into something and instantly find, oh, this is what I was made for. I didn't know that. I was in seminary at the time. And so I was trying to figure out, what am I going to do with ministry? Love people, love God, love the church. But knew that I wasn't, at least at the time, called to be like some kind of senior pastor. That wasn't me. I could preach and teach, but it wasn't like a have to in ministry. I had done student ministry long enough to realize I wasn't any good at it. And so small groups, I thought, I'll give it a shot, and just instantly fell in love with it. I think it's the multiple hats that a small group pastor has to wear. It's leadership, it's building a team, it's development, it's fellowship, it's discipleship, it's congregating people together to cast vision, it's building health, it's equipping people for mission, it's all of these things, it's counseling, it's all of these things kind of combined into one that I thought, man, this is something that I could do for the rest of my life. So I was on staff at Grace Church Plant for almost 6 years, just size and scope. We went from about 1,000 people to a couple thousand people while I was there. And then I hopped on staff at a church, Long Hollow, just north of Nashville. We ran 6,000-7,000 on the weekend, was there for a couple years, and then made the big journey west. How that happened is it's one of the things that I love in ministry. So Steve Gladen, who is he's our central small groups person. He oversees all of our groups at all of our campuses here at Saddleback. And he's been at Saddleback for 17, 18 years. He had just been investing in me for about 5 years. And so we would talk consistently on the phone. We would connect up, you know, once or twice a year. We were at different gatherings together. And we just talked about life and ministry and parenting and small groups and leadership and development. And I didn't ever ask him, hey, would you mentor me? But when I look back on it, that's exactly what he did. He was just investing in me. I was a young leader. I didn't know what I was doing. And he was a more seasoned leader who did. And so I leaned into him as things got, you know, as I hit a snag in the road, I would call Steve and say, hey, how would you handle this? As different things in life came up, I would call Steve and say, what would you do if you were me right now? And he didn't have all the answers, but he walked with me through how he's navigated similar situations. And sometimes it was, hey, here's how I did it right. And other times it was, here's how I really messed it up on this one. So don't do that. And so at one point we were talking through ministry stuff, and he was helping me kind of navigate some difficulties. And he said, hey, maybe the step that you need to take is to just move west. And so over the next 3 or 4 months, we were talking through all kinds of details, and everything in me didn't want to move from the comfort that was Tennessee to us. And what I've realized, though, is that when I'm comfortable, I'm not exercising any faith. I drive towards comfort. I always want that. It's deep inside of me, I'd rather be comfortable than stretched. But every time that I've grown comfortable, I've learned now that when I'm feeling comfortable is the time that I get a little bit afraid, because I know God's going to shake me up a little bit. So every one of our transitions was a transition away from something that was comfortable towards something that we were not unclear as far as God was calling us to, but we were unclear as far as what it would take to be successful with that next step, whether it was us, my wife and I going to seminary or any one of the church roles that we've taken on. It's been a huge step of faith, because we're going, God, we know you're calling us to this, but you've got to show up or we're going to fall flat on our face. And that's exactly what this was too. But thankfully it had Steve had been investing in me and continues to invest in me to help me grow as a leader.
Hey, Ben, I've got a question for you just as a follow-up to that. So our listeners are in all kinds of different contexts, urban, city, rural, small, medium, large. You are one of the people that have, in the last 10 years, if my math was right, as you walked us through that journey, you've been in several different contexts, from Louisville to Clarksville to Nashville, a lot of that in the South, and then moved out west. So I was wondering, have you given much thought to just how those different stops compare and what you've learned at each place?
Yeah, and actually to add another layer, good question, Brian, to add another layer to that. So it's, you know, some different geographical context, but it's also vastly different. It's all been, well, besides my student ministry role in Kentucky, it's all been at vastly different groups' philosophies too. So a church plant is vastly different than a traditional church. And so I've done both of those. A church that has only off-campus small groups. So at the church plant, we're meeting in a high school, and so we don't have the space for anybody to meet on campus. It's just worship and kids ministry on campus. That creates a different set of challenges and a different set of joys than being on staff at a traditional church. We were balancing, Sunday school and working through transitioning all of that, and doing Sunday school, on campus small groups, and off campus small groups, and now at Saddleback, where it's the healthiest mega church I've ever seen in my life, and so doing groups at this high level is vastly different than any other place that I've been. So at the end of the day, though, this is what I'm learning at Saddleback, and as I'm looking back across my journey, I see what I've been pushing for is health. Health is key. At Saddleback, that's what we're aiming at. And numbers are incredibly important because every number means that's another person that gets to experience the life-changing community of a small group. But we never sacrifice health for numbers. And so as I look back, I can see that, it doesn't matter the context. It doesn't matter whether you're in a large church, a small church, a traditional church, a progressive church, a Baptist church, a non-denominational church, a church that has their group's philosophy figured out, or one that's still trying to bolt the wings on as you're taking off the runway. What matters is health. And so if you can build health into your small groups, that's what you need to aim at. And so that's what we're constantly coming back to at Saddleback. And that's what I would say to anybody in any context is, what reigns king is the health of your small groups, not so much whether your groups meet in the southern part of the United States or the Northeast or the Northwest or whatever your context is. Health is the most important thing. And I can't define for you what health looks like. It looks different for us than it would for another church, and that's okay. But it is vitally important that you know what health in your context looks like, and that you aim at that at all costs.
That's good, Ben. Saddleback is also known for just how many groups that you guys start at one time, and you have over 100% participation in small groups, which is just amazing. I mean, a church that size, a giga church that has over 100% in groups. And you talked about health, that they need to be healthy. That's a key. What are maybe another couple keys about how you start so many groups, or what makes them successful. Can you talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah, so we have a unique strategy here at Saddleback, and there's many facets to it. One of the, I think the most important thing that we do as far as starting groups is we start them around a church-wide campaign. So every year we do a campaign where all of our small groups study the exact same thing. What we do in a campaign too that's unique for us that I mean, we have I talked with churches about how we do a campaign, and it's we actually cancel everything else on the calendar. So for 6 weeks of the year, all people have the option to do is be a part of a small group. And so we're not doing our, you know, Wednesday night basketball, men's basketball group that gathers. We're not doing karate classes. We're not doing all these other things that are good. They're really good things. We're not doing our teaching ministry stuff. We're equipping people in that. We're saying, hey, for these 6 weeks, we want you to engage with this content in the context of small groups. And so leading up to a campaign for the couple weeks before the campaign, this is one of the other keys. We have full senior pastor buy-in. So Rick gets on stage and says, okay, you've heard me say this before, but I'm going to say it again. If you're not a part of a small group, your life's not complete. You're not all that you could be if you're not engaging in a small group. And so if you have, and this is called our host model, it's everything at Saddleback is an acronym. So host is also an acronym, H-O-S-T. So if you have a heart for others, if you can open up your place, and so we've put a tweak on, we used to say open up your home, and now we say your place, because it could be that you open up and you're hosting it at a Starbucks, you're hosting it at your work, then you can be a host of a small group. So if you have a heart for others, if you can open up your place, if you can serve a snack, and if you can turn, we used to say you can turn on your VHS, then we transition to if you can turn on your DVD player. Now we've transitioned to if you can type mysaddleback.com. That's our platform for groups. If you can do those things, then you can be a host of a small group. So all we say is, hey, if you got a couple of friends, then let us equip you with everything else you need to be a small group host. And we get pushback from that all the time because people come up to our small groups area and say, hey, I really want to join a small group. And so our pushback on that every single time, and I have this conversation almost every single week, and I'm only one of a handful of people at our campus that are having the exact same conversations every single week where people say, hey, can I join a small group? And our question back to them is, well, yes, we can help you do that, but do you have two friends? And obviously everybody has a couple of friends. Well, then we want to say, how can we equip you to start a small group and lead those friends to Jesus rather than just jumping in and joining a small group? So again, coming back to the campaign strategy, once a year for 2 or 3 weeks in a row, Pastor Rick is going to get on stage and say, if you have a couple of friends, you can start a small group. We can give you everything that you need. We can give you the training that you need. We can give you the curriculum that you need. You don't have to be a Bible scholar. All you need to do is have a couple friends, and we'll give you everything else. And so we set the bar incredibly low for entry because we want we think everybody can lead their friends to Jesus. And so we have people take us up on that every single year. And then so that's the work that Pastor Rick would do from stage. And then our work as a small group team comes in when we work to relationally connect with people. Part of that is, you know, pastor to small group leader. We call them hosts, so pastor to small group host. Some of that is going to be through our infrastructure. So some of you might call them coaches. We call them community leaders. So that's relationally through our community leaders, reaching out to these groups. And the big thing that we focus on is retention. So we have this big spike of groups every year, and then we begin the work of working on retaining those groups and getting them dialed in through the head and the heart. So we want to give them training and tools and curriculum that helps equip them and helps them know what obedience looks like. But then we don't want to just walk away from that, but we want to relationally walk beside them and say, okay, now you know the right thing. Can we help you engage with the content too? So our campaign strategy has helped us grow immensely And I've been in a handful of different models for how we do small groups. Every model has its pluses and its minuses. One of the huge, huge pluses of the way that we do groups is we start small groups by the boatloads every single year.
All right, Ben, here's a question about challenges. So you being a young leader, you still feel young. I know that's a relative term. You feel young to me.
I'm younger than you are, Brian.
Well, more and more, that's becoming less and less hard to do or easy to do. So challenges. So what do you see? We're talking about young leaders now that are beginning to emerge in discipleship ministries at churches. What are the challenges as you have come through, you know, your journey, just that you described to us? What are some of the challenges for young leaders and their ministries that you're beginning to pick up on and see?
It'd be easy for me to say, here are the challenges other young leaders would face, and exclude myself from that process, but I'll be a little vulnerable. And I'm really placing myself too. So I've been in vocational ministry now for 10 years. And I by no means have it figured out, but, I remember when I first started, doing groups, I felt like I had it all figured out. And I'd never really done groups before, but I think there's this drive, for younger leaders to feel like, okay, I've got it figured out. And so let me just implement, let me just go, let me hit the gas. And so one of the challenges for younger leaders is to learn when to take the foot off the gas and lean into other people. So I've had a handful of people, that have journeyed with me. Steve is one of them. I mentioned Ron Edmondson. He's another one for me that I've leaned into at so many different areas of life, where, sometimes I've leaned into them. Sometimes they've leaned into me to remind me that I don't have it figured out and that I still need to learn and grow. And so one of the challenges for younger leaders is to realize that you don't know it all, and that there's plenty of place to learn. One of the things that Pastor Rick says often is leaders are learners and leaders are readers. And so I try to consume as much information as I can. And that means not just things that are going to affirm the way that you already think, but things that are going to stretch the ways that you think. So you may not like Saddleback's model of doing small groups. That's okay. Read about how we do small groups. Learn about how we do small groups. You may not appreciate the way that another denomination builds discipleship, but that's okay. Read and learn and grow from people in directly or from what they've written, what they've produced. The more that you can learn, the better your own system is going to be. The more you can learn, the healthier your church is going to be. So I've tried some because of my own, seeking after knowledge, some because other people have introduced me to different churches and different topics and different thoughts. But the more that you can learn, the better leader you're going to be. And the more chances you have to step into environments of leadership. And when you can go in and ask questions rather than come in with simply solutions, you're going to get respect for that. So ask a ton of questions as a young leader. Way more questions than you come in with solutions, even though in your mind you may think you have the answers. Come in with questions and learn so that you can grow. So I'd say that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, that and I'll throw myself in that camp, that we young leaders would face as we're learning discipleship ministries and as we're trying to build into the health of small groups.
That's one of the things that I love about the attitude overall at Saddleback, and I think it really starts with Pastor Rick and Steve Gladen, and I have been friends for several years, is that I've never felt like anyone at Saddleback feels like they have it figured out. Obviously it's a very large church, very successful, but every time that I've talked to Steve or anybody who's on staff at Saddleback, it's like, how can we learn from you? And they ask me questions about how I'm doing it or just ideas that I have. And so, I think it's not just younger leaders, which that is key, but I think overall, just the culture that you guys have as a staff to say we don't have it figured out. We can learn from churches at any size, any point of their journey, and we can get better from asking questions. I just feel that overall, with the culture there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love being a part of this culture. It's a learning culture, and that says it's okay to fail, and just fail fast. So make the mistakes, grow, and try to do it, you know, better and more effectively the next time. So we're giving permission on a consistent basis to fail, and I love that. And so Pastor Rick is the consummate learner. He's always learning. Chris, you picked up on that from Steve and Chris. The other from Steve and from Rick there. So the other thing I would say that, and maybe this is just me, but I think maybe some other people might resonate with this, is I feel like I know where, you know, as a young leader, maybe know where I want to go, but don't always do the hard work of planning. One of the things that I love, one of the workshops that we put on at Saddleback is called Accelerate. It's through the Small Group Network. And I, just for the record, I don't get any kickback from this at all, so don't think this is a commercial for Accelerate. But I love it because over the course of 2 days, it's a workshop where we take people through a series of 22 questions and help them process what a healthy small group looks like in their ministry context, and then walk away with an 18-month plan for how they're going to budget the volunteers they need, the personnel they need, the curriculum that they need, how long it's going to take to develop those things, so that at the end of 18 months, they can actually accomplish their goals. So I think one of the missing keys for younger leaders is, yes, they can be visionary. Yes, they can know where they want to go. But the hard work is often at the ground level of figuring out, okay, what are we going to do to get us there? That's hard work, and it's not fun. But it's the side of ministry that is productive and efficient that has to be in place if your ministry is going to grow going forward.
One more question for you, Ben. As you kind of look out to the future, and I think you have an interesting perspective on this because, one, you're at a very cutting-edge church and you're a younger leader. What do you kind of see as next, kind of the next thing for the small groups ministry? I think we've hit a point, we've talked about it a lot on this podcast about how we've kind of swung a lot from community to discipleship, and all of that's important. But what do you see as kind of the next thing coming around the corner?
Well, it's not innovative. And it's, can I use my S word again? Can I
Absolutely.
Say sexy again?
Yes, please.
Okay. You probably prefer that S word to another S word. So that would hit the 3-second button. It's not sexy, and it's not going to feel innovative, but balance and health. I think that's the future. Because of this, I mean, you see missional, and that's the thing for a while, and you see discipleship, and that's the thing for a while. You see maybe fellowship, and you know, this swing maybe away from Sunday school, which is more heady and teacher-oriented, teacher-driven, to, and I'm playing up a character here, but to small groups, which are just about hanging out. And you see this pendulum swinging back and forth and back and forth. And I think balance is key. So at Saddleback, we have 5 purposes: fellowship, discipleship, ministry, evangelism, and worship. And so we try to push groups to balance all 5 of those things. So when we hear these discussions about missional small groups, we go, yes, thank you. This is what we want to champion in our small groups, but not to the exclusion of fellowship, not to the exclusion of discipleship. And so we hear, you know, this train of discipleship that's coming, and we at Saddleback go, yes, this is biblical. This is good. We want to do that, but not to the exclusion of worship. So discipleship doesn't trump worship. And then we hear, well, we need to get small groups serving our local communities, to which we reply with, yes, yes, yes. But instead of allowing our groups to just pendulum swing to that, we say, yes, pursue that, but also pursue healthy relationships and fellowship with one another. So I think balance is the key. And that doesn't mean that you're going to see that coming out for the future of small groups, but I think it's a good word for all of us, because it's easy. It's fun to latch on to that thing. And to champion that as, hey, here's what a good small group looks like. A good small group is one that's on mission. But don't let that be the only thing that a small group focuses on. So we push balance. And then I said the word health also, and I've mentioned that earlier. So we say health is found in balance. So a healthy small group is one that pursues all five of those purposes. And that doesn't mean that you do every single one of them every single week. But as you look back over the season of a small group, it will be one that will pursue those five purposes and are working and growing in each of those areas. Small groups based on the leader are probably going to naturally gravitate towards one or two of those purposes. And so that's where we want to make sure we surround leaders with co-hosts and other people that can help them champion what a healthy small group looks like. So balance and health, that would be my hope. So you say, what do you see for the future of small group ministry? I don't know if that's going to be the future, but that would be my hope, is that more ministries, more churches would latch onto this idea of balance and help their small groups, yes, get excited about different trends that are coming and get their small groups excited about those trends, but not to the exclusion of balancing the purposes in their small group.
Ben, one more question, then we'll let you go. Just real quick. So if you were going to recommend one book to our listeners, what would that be?
Ooh, that's a good question. One? You're limiting me to one?
One.
Well, I'm a massive proponent of what we're doing here at Saddleback, and I love it. And so I would recommend Steve Gladen's book.
Of course
on
you would.
Hey, listen, he's going to listen.
He's
going to
say small group with purpose.
And I told,
he's going to say it.
I say that, but I told
him before I jumped on this call. He said, Ben, you must mention my book. So I'm just doing what he told me.
That's just like Glenn.
I say that, but I totally agree with you. So continue.
And here's the truth. I'm a big proponent of Saddleback, not because I have to be, but because I want to be. If you'd called me, so I've been on staff at Saddleback now for 2 years. If you'd called me 3 years ago, I would have said the exact same thing. Steve's book, even if you don't love what we do at Saddleback, is a game changer. So Small Groups with Purpose is it's a phenomenal read. And it goes back and forth between being super practical and being philosophical. And it's high-level ministry and it's on-the-ground ministry. So if you're only going to read one book, read Gladen's book. It's really that good.
If you're going to read two, Small Groups for the Rest of Us is a pretty good book. I always tell people that my book is my version of Steve's book is really what it is. Because
the problem is I don't trust the author. So I don't know. No, and Chris, I would agree. I read it and was blown away. I totally agree. That's a distant second to Steve's book.
It's a great title, though.
I don't even know if I put it on the same board as I don't even know if it's the same thing. It's not even this. Yeah. So, yeah, no, that's good. Hey, Ben, thanks so much for taking the time from your schedule. I know that you are crazy busy on Mondays and Saddleback is always crazy busy. But thanks for taking for a few minutes just to help us out and help our listeners out.
You bet. Love what you guys are doing for the podcast and what you're doing at Lifeway. Love being able to support what you're doing.
Sweet. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
You bet. See you guys.
So, Ben Reed, I've known him since he was in Clarksville. Sounds like you've known him about that same time. He's in the area here. Any thoughts? Of course, Ben is full of information. He's fantastic. So, I would ask you, Chris, any thoughts on what he had to say about balance and health?
I think that's really, really good. Our friend Rick Howerton has something that he calls the four quadrants of biblical life. And basically, he kind of splits it into those, what he was talking about, missional and community and all of that. And he says that if a group is going to be healthy and be spiritually healthy, it's got to have all of these four things to some degree. Now, I think that groups are going to lean toward one most of the time more than they do the others. And a lot of it has to do with the leader and their personal preference or their bent. And probably even more of that goes toward where the pastor is. So if your senior pastor is big on mission and being missional, then probably most of your groups are going to lean that way. If your pastor is huge on community, we got to get everybody in community, probably most of your groups are going to lean that way, and that's okay. But as you look into the health of your groups, you got to figure out, where these other things are coming in. Are they coming in? Do we need to kind of look at some curriculum that helps guide us maybe to being more on mission? Maybe we've been sitting in the same house for a long time and it's kind of us four and no more. And we need to, you know, read something that kind of gets us out of the walls that's serving our community. You know, do we do nothing but study the Bible and we're not doing life together? Do we need to look at that? So I think it's always good for a small groups pastor, a point person, to every once in a while, just check in on your groups and see how healthy they are and how balanced they are. And it doesn't have to be the five purposes. That's a great place to start if you don't have kind of the where your church is. But figure out what are the things that your groups need to be doing at some point and then check on them. Inspect what you expect, as Andy Stanley says.
And balance, in this case, is environment neutral. It's interesting that Ben leaned on the stereotype for a small group in Sunday school. You know, he said one tends to be heady and somewhat scholastic or classroom, and the other one, the stereotype, is just people hanging out. And that those can be the defaults of either of those environments. But if you're intentional, there's that word again about being balanced in your approach, you kind of take not only the stereotypes out, but the environment out of play as well.
Yeah, I think we tend to fall in those camps where either, hey, it's got to be hardcore discipleship, which is Sunday school, or it's got to be community and fun, which is small groups. And they both can be all of that. It's just, you're right about having the balance. If you're going to have Sunday school, do Sunday school well and have it balanced and have community built into it somewhere. If you're going to do just small groups, make sure that there's content, that they're studying, that there's discipleship. So it's kind of being somewhere in the middle with good balance.
And great leadership principle there from Ben. When you're dealing with volunteers, as much as most of our listeners are out there, to come into any kind of scenario or any kind of environment and to ask more questions than offer solutions is a great, great principle.
It is. I learned something a long time ago from one of my mentors. He said, when you're going to go into a meeting with somebody who you feel like, you know, is you're wanting to learn something, and really that's anybody that you should be meeting with, but write down your questions. Be prepared for that meeting so you're going in it knowing what you want to learn from the other person. So be prepared with that. Don't just go in and make it up, because a lot of times we end up talking about ourselves most of the time when we don't have a purpose. So have a purpose for your meetings, even if it's just lunch or coffee. Know what you want to learn from that person, and then just soak it in. Let them do more talking than you do.
Well, I'd like to thank Ben Reed for being with us again. Ben is a friend of the show and a friend of Lifeway, and someone that I've come to know and respect in multiple ways. I'd like to thank Chris. Good to do it again. This is episode 30.
Man, it almost feels like it's just four.
Yeah.
Actually, I was a guest on two of them, and I've now hosted
that's
four.
That's right.
So it's feeling good.
It feels more like, you know, 17 for me. Not 30, though. Maybe 16, maybe in that neighborhood. Thank you for being with us tonight or for this show or this afternoon, wherever you are, on the treadmill or in the car. Look forward to being with you again soon. Thanks to our sponsors, smallgroup.com. Need to check out smallgroup.com. Great tool for quickly and reliably building your own small group studies. So you can sign up for a free trial at smallgroup.com. That's right, isn't it, Chris?
Yep, 2-week free trial. Try everything out. There's no limits to it. You can do everything the site allows you to do in 2 weeks. And I promise you'll love it.
That's going to wrap it up for us at this episode of the Groups Matter podcast. Look forward to being with you again soon. We'll be right back.